Okay, I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee. We have the minutes in the folder, and Representative Hornstein, have you reviewed those minutes? Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
I asked if you'd reviewed the minutes.
Let me do that very quickly.
We collectively did it, Mr. Chair.
I would like to move the minutes.
Okay, Representative Hornstein moves the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, motion carried. You know, I'm a retired teacher, and there are
I noticed that.
Teachers and current teachers on the committee, and sometimes when you want to have some classroom control, you call on the person that's talking.
Mr. Chair, I've always said to people the legislature is a lot like high school, and I think.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that. The people didn't hear it. She said preschool, at any rate, the minutes are approved, and the first bill up is going to be the tax bill, and I think we probably have two of our tax chairs coming forward. Some of the bill comes out of property taxes, and then it went through the full. Are you both going to be at the...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to move House File 3167. Is the motion to the General Register?
That's correct.
Okay, that's my motion.
Okay, that motion is before us, and now there are a couple of amendments. I think one of them is an author's amendment, if I recall. So would you like to do those first or explain the bill first?
I guess I'd need to ask staff which are my amendments here.
A4 is your amendment.
A4.
And Representative Dabney.
Okay, I'll move the A4. Would you like a description, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, if you could give us a quick recap of what the A4 is.
Mr. Chair, this is just getting things fixed on the spreadsheet. As folks who serve on tax committee know that revenue estimates keep coming in as you go through the process, so this finalizes those changes. Additionally, there was an amendment offered by Representative Davids in tax committee, and Representative Davids and I worked on this morning, and for a myriad of reasons, it's not quite ready for prime time, I think, and we're going to take that out now. And if Representative Davids could comment on that as well before we vote on the amendment.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to members. The provision that we put in regarding posting of liquor sales for folks that are delinquent with the department, the amendment said that if they had an agreement with the department, they could be removed from the posting. The Department of Revenue apparently doesn't like it because they had a $2.6 million fiscal note that came out of thin air. But I get how this place works, so I agree with Chair Lanchesky. That should be removed at this time.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. We have one that was submitted by Representative Dabney. Did you want to take that now, or
excuse me? That'd be fine.
That's the A6 amendment. Okay, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A6 amendment for inclusion in House File 3167. Members, in the division report within the omnibus tax bill is a pilot project looking at recruitment and retention of volunteer firefighters and EMS personnel in rural Minnesota and a number of counties in southern Minnesota. And we're still working to try to determine who is the best state entity, the Department of Revenue or the state fire marshal, to issue these incentive checks to those who are good enough to volunteer in those capacities in these rural communities. And this would change it from the Department of Revenue to the state fire marshal.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, any discussion on the A6 amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. Representative Dabney, you had an oral amendment. Did you want to do that now or later?
We can do that now, Mr. Chair. If you'd like, I also have staff was good enough to provide me with hard copies. Would you like those distributed just to simplify it for members or deal with it strictly oral?
If it simplifies it, that would be a good idea.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, then, if it's acceptable, I'd like to move the ASH-VER1 amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Members, in the division report coming out of House File 1884 was some attempts at property tax reform. Members may know Minnesota has the largest number of property tax classifications in the country by a distance. I think the nearest state in terms of number as well as proximity is South Dakota, that has something like 12 or 13. Wisconsin has one, as Mr. Michael explained in tax committee. We were attempting to remove some of the special property tax classifications. I would now like to delete those from the bill. As an oral amendment, this would be page 16, delete section 1. Page 19. Okay. Mr. Chair, I need to correct myself and the paper documents before the members. Line 1.2 of the ASH-VER1, it should read page 16, delete section 7. Page 19, delete section 8. Page 24, delete section 9. And page 34, delete section 13.
Representative Davney, I was just getting a copy of it, so could you repeat what your changes were?
Certainly.
I didn't have a copy, and probably other members didn't at that point either.
Understood, Mr. Chair. On line 1.2, it should read page 16, delete section 7. On line 1.3, page 19, delete section 8. And then again, as it's stated on the amendment before members, page 24, delete section 9, and page 34, delete section 13.
Okay, and that would then bring it back to current classifications.
That's correct. Maintains current law.
Yeah. Any discussion? Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Dabney.
Okay, any other comments? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Now, there are at least one other amendment, but I think you'll probably want to take that after you present the bill. That's Representative Detmer's got. You've submitted two, but I think you're only going to move one at when they're. Why don't we do those when they're done?
Okay,
these were to get the
fine.
Bills in the shape that the authors wanted them, so we'll take your.
I have two amendments.
Yeah, but they're the same. With the exception of the date, are you going to do you want to take them both
one,
up later?
One deals with the revenue note.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that when they're done presenting the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Chesky.
So just to quickly walk through the omnibus tax bill number two, members, and you know, it's April 1st, and I just want to take a moment to thank members of the Minnesota Legislature on both sides of the aisle. We worked diligently, and I want to call out Representative Davids on this, to the Tax Committee, and many members here are on the Tax Committee. We worked diligently to pass federal conformity, get tax cuts to middle-class Minnesotans, and repeal the B2B. That's law. We did a lot of good work already. There's some other things that happened in that bill. It was sort of a compromise between the House, Senate, and the governor, and this is majority and minority members. So now... Yes?
Phyllis, Representative Kahn, indicated she had a question, but is it right now?
Well, just the point. Since you said it was April 1st, are you going to end up by then saying April Fool's?
Nope. what I want to point out about that it's April 1st is here we are on April 1st passing another tax bill with another $100 million in tax cuts. And, you know, I think it's remarkable for those of us on both sides of the aisle who've watched how long it takes to get agreement around tax bills. And there's no doubt it's easier with a surplus, no doubt. But I do want to thank so much the members of the Tax Committee who've worked very hard this year and very quickly to get a second bill to the Minnesota Legislature. We're hoping the Senate will move just as quick. And I also want to thank people in the minority and the majority who've helped us move the Senate quicker. And so we hope that will happen again. And so just briefly, because this is the Ways and Means Committee, I think the best way to look at this bill is to look at the spreadsheet, because we're not talking about the policy, we're just talking about the money part. So first page of the spreadsheet, members, it looks like this, is the overall target for the committee. And so you can see on line 7, that's the total tax cut number for this bill, $103 million in this biennium. And a quick way to just understand what's going on there is just turn to the next page, and you can see within the individual and income estate, we have a number of things going on there, whether it's exempting military pay from the income tax, helping people who are in foreclosure again going forward, extending the R&D credit brought to us by Representative Anderson for sole proprietors. We're doing some business help in the June accelerated area, so that helps us get rid of a gimmick a little bit. We're also, if you look under sales and use, there's a lot of members' bills going on there, and these are all sales tax exemptions for various purposes, and a lot of it is to correct some of the local units of government that were left out in last year's bill, whether it's joint powers agreements or port authorities or HRAs, things like that. Then if you continue on to page 2, you can see June Accelerated also addresses the excise tax, so that's, I'm sorry, page 3, that's page 3 of the spreadsheet, and then pages 4, 5, 6, 7, or 6 are Representative Dabney's division work in the property tax area, and he can get into that, but I know members are aware this is property tax relief for homeowners, renters, and farmers, and then a number of individual members' provisions, and you can see them there. And then, of course, the tax bill always has effects on non-general fund items, and they're listed on the on page 7 and 8 of the spreadsheet. So, Mr. Chair, that's the fiscal impact, and I think that sums up the bill for the work of this committee.
Okay, and are there any questions? Okay, well, we do have, as I mentioned earlier, two amendments from Representative Detmer, and which order do you want to take?
Mr. Chair, let's go with the A11. That deals with the revenue notes.
Okay.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. As you know, I've been working on this for several years and getting a tax break for our veterans when they do retire here in Minnesota. We have 377,000 veterans in Minnesota, but only 4.7% of those are retired with 20 years or more or medically retired here in Minnesota. So we only have approximately 19,000 veterans that are actually here in Minnesota that are retired. And my goal is to make Minnesota a more friendly place for veterans to come back after 20 years or come here from 20 years after 20 years and retire here. And they will bring their educational benefits, which now their spouses and their children can use. They will also bring their medical care, their TRICARE. They will start businesses here. They will buy homes, you name it. But right now, other states have figured out if they don't tax their retirement pay that they bring in millions of dollars into the state. And this bill that I have, or this amendment, is different what I've offered before, where this, for every 20 years of service, or whether you are retired medically or after 20 years when you can retire. And remember, in Minnesota or nationwide, if you're a Guard or Reserve, you can't start drawing any retirement to age 60. So what this amendment would do, it would, if for every year of service that you've served in the Guard or the Reserve or active component, that you can, when you do your taxes, you can deduct $1,500 for every year of service. And the revenue note for the A11 is for fiscal year 2015 would be $18.2 million. For fiscal year 2016 would be $18.7 million. And fiscal year 2017 would be $19.2 million. Those are estimates. And again, I would want your support on this. I really feel, I know it throws the tax bill out of whack, but hopefully the chair can make some adjustments. I know we've made a lot of adjustments over so far this session and different money matters, and we hope that this is also a priority for the governor's task force. They have recommended this as one of their top three priorities, and again, I hope to get your support, and I'm open for some questions.
I think this is one I may have to rule on, but Representative Lencheski, could you tell us how close you are to your target?
Mr. Chair, I am at both my current year target and or current biennium, and then there's an internal tails target I have, and I'm at that as well.
Yeah, that the second amendment may we will have to talk about that part of it at that point. But this particular amendment, the fiscal note that I have here would carry a cost of $18.2 million. I think you summed it up well, Representative Detmer, at the end of your comments when you said it would blow the tax committee budget. That's the issue. So I'll have to rule this one out of order, Representative Detmer.
Okay, I'll go with
because
that.
Because of the budget resolution.
Okay, the A-10 amendment. What it basically the same same bill, but it pushes it out December 31, 2016, when they would do their taxes. So there would be no cost now. I know the veterans would like to get this on the books so that, and as a legislature, then now we can start preparing for this. And Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call on this one.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Representative Lincheski, where are you on your tails target?
Mr. Chair, I'm at my tails target.
Okay, now this is one, members, that I can't rule out of order because we don't formally in the budget resolution deal with tails, but we do give those instructions to each of the committee chairs so that we're watching what the costs would be in the out biennium. And this one does carry a cost, according to the fiscal note, of $19.2 million in tails. And as Representative Lincheski pointed out, she is at her tails target. Representative Holbert.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make the point that the tails target is not part of the budget resolution that governs the spending of this committee. And yeah, I think Representative Lincheski used the term internal tails target. I don't recall any tails target being presented to the whole committee, so I'm unaware
of Representative
that.
Representative Holbert, I thought I said that is set with the committee chairs are informed of what their tail target should be because we do have to watch costs as we are addressing issues in the out biennium. You had to watch those when you were chair of the committee, and that's why this one I said I can't rule out of order because it's not part of the budget resolution. In the end, we'll have to vote on this one. Mm-hmm. A roll call was requested. Yeah. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that if you've been watching the news and so forth, the downsizing of our active component, we have many men and women that are deciding what they want to do because they're being in the military personnel don't have unions to support them when there's a downsize in structure, and basically they open the door and say thank you for your service and you know thank you. We would like to see some of these men and women with get ready to retire after 20 years, mm-hmm. come back to Minnesota and bring their skill sets, the things that they've learned over their leadership skills. These are the type of people we want to have in Minnesota. And when they do retire or leave the active duty service, they're given their counsel and they are told which states are friendly towards veterans when they do retire. And we might not have the best weather for these guys and gals to come back to, but we can at least try our best as a legislature to make this a friendly state for veterans to come back and start businesses and apply their skills that they've learned after 20 years. Again, they'll be in their 40s, and right now many of our retired veterans that are in Minnesota are those older. The younger ones are not necessarily coming back here in numbers that that other states are seeing. So I hope that we can at least get this on the books, and then so that the word will get out, and then the future legislation can future legislators can then make those financial adjustments.
Okay, Representative Lincheski, any concluding comments before we go to a vote?
Yeah, I would urge members to vote no. I hear Representative Detmer, and I know he's pursued this as folks have before him for a number of years. And I just want to tell the committee a little bit about why. Members, in this bill, Representative Murphy's provision is in here to exempt military pay. That is something we've done for a lot of folks in the pay area of the military, whether it's Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and now we're adding the National Guard. And that's in this bill. What Representative Detmer is talking about is people have 20 years in and are receiving pension and retirement benefits, and he's exempting that from the income tax. And so just a little background for members as you think about before this, before you vote. You know, Minnesota does not exempt anybody's pension from the income tax. Everybody would like that, right? You know, firefighters and police officers and teachers and all kinds of people who have served us would like, and people in the private sector would like their pension to not have to pay tax on it, but that isn't what we do in Minnesota. Everybody does, and we're silent on where income comes from. So I think if folks want to start eroding that situation, you have to think long and hard about what that means for the future as the baby boom retires, and that is a lot of the revenue receipts that will come in to run the government. You know, additionally, there's the issue in that, you know, who are we talking about here? Well, we're talking about people who have 20 years in the military, and, you know, these, of course, you know, we're indebted to them, and folks who have less time in the military, folks who have 1 year and 2 year, people who have been in combat, people who have received Purple Hearts, those folks would not qualify for this sort of special provision within the tax code. So, you know, I hope members will think about what this means. You know, if the argument is that we need to do this, that those people will come here, you know, there are certainly going to be lower income tax states in Minnesota, even if this were adopted. There are a number of states, members, that don't have an income tax, period. And we're not going to be able to compete with them with or without this provision. So it's a, those are different kind of revenue structures for states. The other thing I would ask folks to think about, if you want to create a tax incentive to get certain sorts of people to come here for a second career, you know, I think we'd be best served to think through how we might do that for certain highly skilled workers, whether it's engineers or scientists or whoever we need, independent of whether they have military service. If they're, you know, if they have military service, great, and if they don't, that's another thing. But this really, there is no empirical research that shows this somehow brings people here and brings certain kinds of workers here to do certain kinds of work. So, you know, I just, you know, as much as people don't like to, you know, have to vote no on something like this, I would ask people to vote no, remembering we exempt military pay, and we're doing more of that in here, and we do not exempt anyone from paying income taxes on their pensions. And, you know, I can just imagine if Minnesota started doing this, there will be a long line of professions who will say, I've done good work too on behalf of Minnesotans, and I would like to not pay income taxes on my pensions. But that is not what we do. The last thing I think to think about is there would be, you know, this would be using a tax incentive for people who both need it and who don't. People who will come here and who won't. Many people won't come to Minnesota because of this provision, and it's very expensive. So I think I've, you know, laid out five or six reasons. I understand the advocates want this tax benefit for this group of people, but I would urge members to vote no.
Representative Detmer, your hand went up. Otherwise, we're going to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Lanchesky. You mentioned a long line of people. I guess I can only think the long line of men and women who are waiting in line to get on those aircraft to be sent over to battle. There might be other people in different careers that might want something like this, but I don't think you could name another career where people are sent from this country, from their homes, from their families, to serve in combat. And I really feel that this is something we could do positive for our veterans and to bring them back here to Minnesota. And I really, I look at the amount here and I guess, and then I look at the amount of some of the things that we spend money on here in the state, and I think this would be a really good investment into the people that have served 20 or more years and want to make Minnesota their home. So I ask you for your support.
Mr. Chair, just in closing, I do want to, and I hear the passion there, I do want the members to understand something. Many people who would get on those planes and serve in combat would never qualify for this. I mean, I just ask everybody to think of people you know who are serving us who will never have 20 years in. And so all of those people are excluded from this provision. You know, the other thing I would ask members to just think about is this is a price tag that absolutely, through the targeting process and through a budget resolution, you know, earlier in the year, we could say, let's put this to veterans, as Representative Detmer has said. I think arguably folks who work in that area on that committee would tell you, and this is testimony we've had in taxes, that that money is probably best targeted for folks who need to find jobs, who are disabled now, who are looking for housing. We have a lot of veterans who only have 1 year in and 2 year in and 3 year in and 4 year in and have served our country and are now, they have brain injuries, they're looking for housing, they can't find a job. So, you know, you could use these sort of resources in that way. So there are all different kinds of ways to look at all the people who serve us and how to spend money on them. This is a targeted tax provision built into the tax code to look at a certain group of people. And, yes, some have had combat, but the majority of folks who've gone into combat would not qualify. So I don't want people to misunderstand, what this is designed to do.
Okay, Representative Detmer wants to comment, and then we'll
I believe if you, Mr. Chair, maybe you could help me on this. Wasn't it in the early 70s or 72, Minnesota at one time did not tax our veterans' pension? I think then it was taken away. I believe that was, if I recall.
When you go back to the 1970, that even predates me, although I've been accused of going back to the Civil War.
My recognition is that, at one time Minnesota...
I remember I was on the tax committee in the... 73-74 session, and
I think it was 72 when Minnesota then took that benefit away.
Mr. Chair, if you want the answer, Mr. Michael's here in the audience, but pre all that, I know there was an elderly exclusion, and many things were changed in the Minnesota tax code as we started working off FTI. But if you want to get the answer, the staff person is here if you'd like it.
I don't know if we. That's just a general time comment. I'm not sure that we need the exact date. With that, clerk will take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Abler? Anderson?
Yes.
Ansel?
Yes.
Atkins?
No.
Beard?
Aye.
Reinhart?
No.
Clark?
No.
Davids?
Yes.
Dabney?
No.
Dean? Detmer?
Yes.
Gunther?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
Yes.
Hausman?
No.
Hillstrom?
No.
Holberg?
Yes.
Hornstein?
No.
Huntley?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Nancheski?
No.
Loon?
Aye.
Mahoney?
No.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Mullery?
No.
Norris?
Yes.
Paymar?
No.
Plowski?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Simon?
No.
Wagenius?
No.
Woodard?
Yes.
Okay, being 12 ayes and 20 nays, the amendment is defeated. We don't have any further amendments. Do the two of you want to make any concluding comments before we go with the final motion?
Mr. Chair, I don't know what Representative Dabney has, but I would want to thank again so much the members of the Tax Committee in a bipartisan fashion. This really is a product of both sides of the aisle trying to think through provisions. There are certainly provisions in this bill I personally don't like. There are things people wish they had in here that are not. But in general, I think given the committee target, we've done really good work for providing more tax relief. And I do want to thank Representative Dabney. For members who serve on his committee, you know well how many hearings he had on so many detailed issues, and the committee has worked very hard to bring us significant property tax relief for homeowners, renters, and farmers. And I think this has been a good year with the House in trying to work together to do what we can in the area of taxes, and I just want to thank Representative Dabney so much.
Representative
Dabney. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me return the gratitude to Chair Lincheski for her leadership and collaboration. The property tax division report that is in this bill does reassert our concerns about property tax taxes for homeowners, renters, and farmers, and enhances support for them. As I think the chair knows, this is the first year in 12 years that Minnesotans will actually pay less in property taxes than they did the year before after their refund programs, a significant shift in Minnesotans' experience of property taxes. We enhance that for renters and homeowners, and as well as farmers, important assistance as we see farm incomes dropping significantly. Research released just last week, a 78% drop in farm income last year, making those sharply spiking farmland values more burdensome on our farm community. Other provisions in the bill, but the most important thing is that we look out at Minnesotans and listen to them, and I've responded to their concerns about property taxes in the division report. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we have two that have indicated that they'd like to comment before we renew the motion. And Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, just a couple of things on this bill that concern me. Some of them the chair has heard before in tax committee, but I think that you, the rest of the members, need to be aware of. One of the items is I get a lot of heartburn when I look at the fact that we are extending the Duluth food and beverage and lodging tax for another X amount of years. And it was supposed to be temporary in the first place. It was first put in place in 1998, and now we're re-upping for another round without voter approval. And there's other communities here that are going for these sales taxes, but they are required to get voter approval. So I have a little heartburn when we're looking at those pieces. But the other piece that I'm really more alarmed about is the fact that this is basically shifting tax burden onto small business owners, because you have a provision in this bill that in essence says that if you happen to rent space, you're a tenant in a large building, which we have several of those across the state of Minnesota, and it's not just limited to the metro area, it's also in greater Minnesota as well, and these folks now are going to have their tax burden shifted onto them, and I think that's really unfortunate, and I'd hope that maybe this provision would be removed at some point, because I think that's at a time when our businesses are struggling, as is, we're just going to be adding to their burden. And I'm sure you probably read in the headlines today that 3M is moving their meeting for the first time ever to Austin, Texas. And I think that's just a sign of things to come if we don't stop this bleeding. $2.1 billion tax increase, and we're giving chump change back in return. I just wish that we would be doing more for tax relief for our state as a whole. That's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. This bill works to alleviate tax challenges to our small businesses. It does that in several ways. You know, the economy is coming back, but that's the good news for some of our small businesses. They are challenged. What the bill does is eliminate the statewide business commercial industrial property tax for small businesses, those with valuations of less than $150,000. This will be helpful in the metropolitan area. Greater Minnesota, where property values tend to be a little bit lower, this will have a significant positive impact on those property taxpayers across the state where they need it. Additionally, the changes to the June accelerated sales tax, we're getting a little wonky here, but we double the threshold from $120,000 to $250,000 for when a small business or any business needs to pay June accelerated sales tax, as well as dropping the percentage that they need to pay in June from 90% to 82%. So there's a number of strong supports in this bill for small businesses. As to the city of Duluth, they have that. The tax has blinked off. They have come forward with a very strong economic development plan, particularly to pick up some of the damage after that severe flood there a couple of years ago that in many ways destroyed the Duluth Zoo and did other damage across the city, to rehabilitate that area as well as reconnect all of us to the St. Lawrence River. And it's a very exciting development. The way we have structured that provision in the bill is to have them pay off the bonds needed as quickly as possible and have that tax blink back off.
Mr. Chair. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dabney, some of the points that you highlighted here on the June accelerated tax, you're not giving them any tax relief on that. You're just shifting when it's being paid. So let's be honest with the people here in the room. It's just another shift. And the shift on the $150,000, basically anybody that is in a place that they're a tenant of that place, they're going to have to pay that tax because it's going to be passed on to them. So another shift there. So I can count at least two shifts alone in this bill from what you've just described.
Representative Chesky.
Yes, and if I may just, while Duluth is certainly special, and I see Representative Simonson right here, as Representative Anderson knows, there's a history that predates most of us here on who has what kind of sales tax provisions. I just want to highlight that this is the food and beverage and the lodging tax, and Representative Anderson, it did change from what Representative Simonson introduced, and we generally do not require voter approval of food and beverage taxes or lodging taxes, and I think the thing to note on Duluth is actually the net effect of the changes to the bill as introduced means things are going to get paid off faster, so there'll be less taxes than was proposed, and they will pay off the improvements quicker. But I want to say to Representative Anderson, you know, I personally share some of the concerns you've raised as it relates to commercial and industrial tax, but I think there's, you know, some conflicting goals there, and that's just the tension within the bill. I guess I would disagree a little with one thing Representative Anderson said, which is I do think that the threshold level change to June Accelerated, that Representative Dabney carried that provision within June Accelerated, absolutely is true relief, because a whole bunch of businesses aren't going to have to do this whole thing we call June Accelerated, and not to bore the Ways and Means Committee to tears, but basically it's a gimmick whereby businesses have to estimate a tax they think they're going to get, and then they have to pay it up front and get it paid back later. And so the bill does give relief to a lot of folks who no longer have to be involved in this at all. More businesses no longer will have to estimate those payments. So there is true relief for quite a few businesses in the bill.
Representative Davids?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just say that I too share some of the concerns of Representative Anderson. But, you know, this is certainly not the smoking hot tax bill, but it's quite warm. I'm going to vote yes.
Well, that maybe this is a good time for Representative Lincheski to renew her motion.
You know, and I know we've changed the rules on how we make these motions, so I'm going to read it.
Okay, that's fine.
Representative Lincheski, that's me, renews her motion that House File 3167, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register, and it was given to me by Ms. Conley. Thank you.
You don't take off the recommended to pass.
Punt, kick.
We have to, as Representative Davids very well knows, we have to take off the word pass. Ms. Conley made one of the very few errors that she ever makes. So the motion, and if anybody, I don't know if we're on TV this time, at least for the people within the audience, the rules did change as to what a motion has to be. So Representative Lincheski renews her motion that House File 3167, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay.
That's the motion that's before us. Any discussion? Representative Davids.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this tax bill is quite warm. I'd like to vote to pass it.
I think you have a little history with this motion, so
expensive.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you both. And by the way, you were complimenting one another. I happen to serve on both the division and the full committee, and they both are very hardworking committees. Just the sheer number of bills that you both receive, and so I'll add myself to the list of people who compliment you for a job well done. Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
The next bill, being that we've already referenced Representative Simonson from Duluth, but this is a little different question than what was in the tax bill. So, I would like to move that House File 2446, second engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. And then there are two authors' amendments. Would you like to take them before you present the bill or after?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if we could, if you could move the A3 followed by the A4, please.
Okay, so the Chair moves the A3 amendment. Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And this, members, is the synthetic drug bill that's made its way through a number of committees this session. it is the essentially the recommendations of the select committee that did their work over the interim trying to come up with a viable solution to our statewide synthetic drug problem. The amendment, the A3 that you have before you, essentially corrects a concern that was brought up in the Judiciary Committee. So hopefully we've been able to appease some of those folks that were concerned. The rest of the bill has been relatively non-controversial, and I would just speak to the A4, Mr. Chair, is the appropriation of $163,000 fiscal year 2014. And this is the one of the big pieces of the bill is the educational program, trying to reach out, especially targeting children, middle school, high school, and young adults about synthetic drugs and the hazards of those. And it requires the commissioners of education and health and human services to work together and form and implement an educational awareness campaign, which they've already started upon. So with that, Mr. Chair, and then Section 11, too, on the A4 appropriates $5,000 in 2015 to the Board of Pharmacy to implement the requirements of the policy in the bill.
Okay, Mr. Marks, good comment on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, on the A5 amendment with the appropriations in, just if you're comparing to the fiscal note, just a couple notes there. The appropriation to the Department of Human Services is $163,000 here. The Department of Human Services is actually showing $57,000 in revenue as well here, so their net cost is $106,000. However, this is where there's federal funds participation money, or FFP. The state has to spend the money, and then the federal funds come in to fill in behind. So the net cost of that will be $106,000, but we have to appropriate the full $163,000. The Pharmacy Board appropriation is from the State Government Special Revenue Fund, the $5,000. Also on the fiscal note, just a note here, the Administrative Hearings Office is showing a cost of $18,000 in fiscal 15 and $3,000 in subsequent years. That's a statutory appropriation from the Administrative Hearing Officers or Administrative Hearings Fund, so that does not need to show up in the bill. It's already in the statute. So.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? I thought it was important because it kind of ties the two together here. Seeing none, then, all those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Chair moves the A5 amendment. Representative Simonson, that kind of ties in with what we already were talking about. Maybe I can just ask Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, I think we've already covered the A5 with the appropriations here. So.
Yeah. So any further discussion on that amendment? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The bill is now before us as amended. Any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, then, I'll renew my motion that House File 2446, the second engrossment as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Okay, our next bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Moline. I should point out, by the way, before Representative Moline starts, that for informational, these bills, when we talk about the costs, remember with the budget resolution, we had a category, other funds, other bills, and that's where the funding is coming from. Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have before you House File 2576. Someone would be so kind as to move it.
I will move that House File 2576, fourth engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I also have two amendments, the first being the A19 amendment.
And you would, I take it, like to do the amendments before you present the bill then?
Yes, well, Mr. Chair.
Chair moves the A-19 amendment. Rep. Semeling on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this was simply an oversight on our part. When we first drafted the bill, we had accidentally taken out some court filing fees regarding filing expungement petitions, and we now corrected that language, and so that eliminates entirely the cost that the court had estimated would be the result of the bill, which is $159,000. So this takes care of that filing fee issue.
Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. You have a another amendment, A-21. The chair moves the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this is the appropriation piece of the bill, the first being $600,000 to the Department of Public Safety for the BCA. Originally, the BCA had estimated a higher amount than that, but I just talked to them, and they just passed me their most recent fiscal note, and it is under $600,000. So we adjusted the numbers in the original fiscal note to reflect what their current estimate is for what their costs would be. And the second is an $82,000 appropriation to the Department of Human Services, which is what their cost estimate would be. And then they, in turn, will be reimbursed $29,000 from the federal government after enactment. So the actual cost to the state will be $53,000, but we need to appropriate that $82,000 up front.
Okay, Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, that's a good summary of it.
Okay. I didn't know if you had anything to add. Okay, with that, any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this is also a bill that came out of a working group that was put together over the interim, a bipartisan working group, a joint between the House and the Senate, chaired by Representative Hillstrom in the House and Senator Champion in the Senate, and came about after years of discussion regarding the expungement of records, criminal and juvenile records, but more so in reaction to some recent Minnesota Supreme Court decisions that really put the ball in the court of the legislature as far as addressing this issue. So it's a pretty comprehensive bill that has broad support by about 50 different member organizations, the Minnesota Second Chance Coalition, the Council on Crime and Justice, the Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, and we've also worked closely with the County Attorneys Association, the Coalition of Battered Women, and adopted language to address their concerns. And I think this is our fifth committee hearing, and so far there hasn't been any opposition testimony. So with the appropriations in place, Mr. Chair, I would just ask for members' support.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Pulver.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and could you briefly explain how the issue of Health and Human Services finds out if there's an expunged record? It was a concern that was brought up at near the end of the working group that if they were to issue licenses for PCAs or some nursing home workers and their ability, we know that law enforcement has access to expunged records forever. But that this whole licensing issue and safety, how was that resolved?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, Section 1 and 2 clarify the Department of Human Services and their involvement in the expungement process. What's required is if you file an expungement petition, you have to give notice to the Department of Human Services. And then you go in front of the court, and there's a number of factors the court has to consider in determining whether or not you should get an expungement. And at that time, the Department of Human Services is able to weigh in on their opinion as to whether or not that record should be expunged. If the record is expunged, the expungement order has to be directed at the Department of Human Services. If those two things don't happen, if either the commissioner doesn't get notice or the commissioner isn't served with an expungement order, then those records don't apply to the Department of Human Services for licensing purposes. If those things do happen and the commissioner gets proper notice and it goes through the hearing and the Department of Human Services weighs in and then the order is issued directed at the commissioner, then they would then those records would be subject to the expungement order, including for licensing purposes.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I wasn't clear with my question. The concern that we discussed in the working group was not about prior to expungement or the expungement process, but post-expungement, in that you could have somebody that, because as we know, you list these felony-level convictions as being eligible for expungement, many times the actual behavior is far worse than what they, in a plea agreement, agree to. So you could have individuals that have an expunged record 8 years after completing some kind of program for these listed items that are in the bill summary, when in actuality what they did was far worse than these, and say they want to then, after they have the expungement happen, they want to work as a PCA or work in a nursing home. And Health and Human Services, as the bill left the working group, would never have the ability to know that this person behaved in a very bad way, say, 10 years ago, because they would not have access to the expunged records.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, so the felonies that are listed in the bill, for DHS licensing, there's a 7-year disqualifier, 15-year disqualifier, and then a lifetime disqualifier, I think. The felonies listed, I'm not sure if any of them are a disqualifier under DHS, because we carved out crimes of violence and we carved out any of the serious felonies, and so they're very low-level felonies that aren't usually subject to the DHS licensing provisions. The misdemeanors and gross misdemeanors under the DHS licensing provisions are primarily subjected to that 7-year and 15-year disqualifier presently. But under the bill, the way that it's written, and we did adopt the amendments that the Department of Human Services asked us to adopt in the last committee, which make up Section 1 and 2, 1 and 3 of the bill. If somebody for some reason has a record expunged, which would be a disqualifier under licensing, and they meet all the requirements of notification, then that record is expunged for the purposes of licensing.
Representative Beard.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was going to ask the author of the bill, Representative Moline, about the full-time equivalence that I see on the fiscal note here. I know the last several days we've had bills come through, some of which I actually agree with the premise of policy-wise, but I'm a little alarmed at the number of FTEs that continually show up. Representative Moline, I'm noticing in the fiscal note that public safety is the one that seems to be asking for 10 new full-time equivalents a year. Or am I misreading that? Is it 10 and they're going to keep them for 3 years, or are they going to add 10, 10, and 10? Can you speak to that? It's if the fiscal note, it's on the next to the last page, I believe. Page 18 and 19, actually, of the fiscal note. I guess a follow-on question was, are you confident that they need that many, or is that an upper limit of what we're going to authorize them to hire?
Representative Moline?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, I'm trying to look at the new fiscal note that the BCA just handed me, and I don't think it has even been posted yet, but they are here if they want to comment on that.
Did you hear the question?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members, Dana Goetz from the BCA. And yeah, our revised fiscal note shows 8.5 new FTEs. So we reduced it a little bit. Obviously, it's difficult to predict the volume of the increase, but that was based on a less than 1% increase of total records that would be eligible for expungement.
Mr. Chair, then, just for the committee's edification, that the eight and a half, I think that's a one-time hire, and they'll continue through the 3 years of the fiscal note then?
Mr. Chair and members, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I see we have the fourth engrossment in front of us, but the fiscal note in our packet is for the first engrossment.
Mr. Marks, I think you've got a little history with that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, we've been watching it, and until the amendments added today, there hadn't been any significant fiscal changes going in. We will request the new fiscal note now because of both amendments today, but there hadn't been any significant fiscal changes prior in the second and third engrossments.
Well, Mr. Chair, we just heard the testifier say the latest fiscal note, and so I'm not sure what if she misspoke or.
Mr. Chair and members.
Comment on that question.
This is the fiscal note that we submitted as the BCA through DPS and the MMBB process, and I just don't think it's been officially posted yet. So these are our numbers that we submitted yesterday.
You submitted those to MMB?
That's correct.
Okay, I don't know if they're here to tell us it'll be signed quickly or not. That was the situation yesterday, but.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Ms. Getzo, is the fiscal note changes that you submitted to MMB yesterday based on the fourth engrossment that's before the committee here today?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, yes, that's correct.
I don't quite understand when they're submitted and we have a hearing that those haven't been signed and brought forward. We had remember that testimony yesterday. I don't know. Is MMB here? We'll get that as soon as possible. Any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moline, this is the first time for me seeing this, so I just had a question because I recently saw a news item on, I believe it was Ramsey County, and right now they are trying a new tactic to stop people that are repeat offenders in stealing things from retailers, basically. So what they'll do is they're right under the threshold and they can't be charged with, I believe it's a felony, because the amount that they're stealing doesn't rise to that level. And so they are now charging them in a different way to try and get kind of the cumulative effect of it. So are those individuals, each time they commit that kind of crime, is that going to be expunged from their record, and will that prevent counties of using this new tool?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, a couple of things. There's a time delay in between, you know, if a conviction were to occur and when you could get an expungement. For a misdemeanor, it's 5 years, and for the felony, it's 8 years. But what we did in this bill, in agreement with law enforcement community and with the county attorneys, was we allowed, sorry, I can't see you directly, we allowed criminal justice agencies to have access to expunged records without a ex parte court order, meaning that criminal justice agencies and county attorneys can access, if a record were to be expunged, I think it would be unlikely that a repeat offender would have their record expunged, but if it were, criminal justice agencies would be able to access that for the purpose of sentencing, enhancement. And so to your question, where there's been several offenses and they want to maybe increase it to a felony based on how much merchandise has been stolen, they would be able to do that because the prosecutor would have access to those records.
Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion no. Carried. I have the next bill, so I'd like to turn the chair over to Representative Dabney.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that House File 3014, the first engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, just as a quick overview of the bill and in a reference to the cost, This would change the way in which we handle unfair labor practices. Currently, unfair labor practices must go to the court for resolution. And the bill would put Minnesota in line with 30-some other states where it would be through the Bureau of Mediation Services, whereby a special three-person panel would be set up, one from the labor group, one from management, and then they would select a third panel member. And then we also have in the bill a provision that if one of the panel members would have a conflict, in other words, if theirs was the unfair labor charge, there would be three alternates that could fill in for those particular slots. We have some rough cost estimates in terms if you go to court, it would run anywhere from probably $50,000 to $75,000. One local unit government had ran $200,000 to resolve an unfair labor practice. On average, looking at the other states that have this kind of provision, they run on average about $5,000, and it's a much faster resolution. So although it's not officially part of the on-session agenda, I view it in much the same way. It makes for a faster, more efficient, more cost-effective system. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the bill in a nutshell. This bill and ones virtually identical went to, I think, four different committees. And so the bill that is before you is the one that was reported out of the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. And other bills that some would call clones, if you will, went to the other relevant committees. So it touched all the various bases, or at least the language did.
Thank you.
And I have an amendment.
Sure. That's just where we're going to go. Would you like to move the H3014A1 amendment?
Yes, and that amendment, Mr. Chairman, when we started out with this, it was my understanding that all of the public employee unions came under PELRA. And because of a little different history with hospital employees, there is an AFSCME union that represents public employees in small public hospitals. And because they're under a separate statute, we quite frankly missed them. So I view it as pretty much a housekeeping amendment. They wanted to be included. The reason when PELRA was originally passed, and I was here when we did that, hospital employees were under federal law. And in the 1990s, that was changed where they were under state law, and but under a different statute. So they would also have the same process. And I've checked with the chair of the Jobs and Economic Development Committee, and he's fine with taking up the amendment here.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Simon, you're on the list. Is it to the amendment or to the underlying? We'll come back to you then. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is to the amendment. Chair Carlson, I serve on a board of a religious order that owns several hospitals and other health care facilities. Can you make me comfortable with help us understand what the charitable hospital is and what we're really doing here? You'll pardon my concern and suspicion, but would you please explain what a charitable hospital is? If you can name a few of them, that would be great. I'd appreciate it.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I think that may be a question that is there someone that can... when you say to name a few, I just know they're small public hospitals that would be in some of our smaller communities, but maybe we can get some information on that.
Good afternoon. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nicole Blissenbach, and I'm an attorney with Education Minnesota. I've been working along with this, but charitable hospitals, as defined in state statute, include municipal and county-owned hospitals. So some of those might include, I know that there are a number of them, Rice Memorial Hospital in Willmar, Douglas County Hospital in Alexandria, Cook County North Shore Hospital in Grand Marais, Cook County Hospital in Cook, Swift County Benson Hospital in Benson, Big Fork Valley Hospital in Big Fork, Murray County Medical Center in Slayton. But they are county and municipal-owned hospitals.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, and to the Chair Carlson, have we had any testimony or opinions expressed by the municipalities that own these hospitals or the people who operate them?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I no.
Okay.
Any other questions regard or comments regarding the amendment? Seeing none, seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. No.
Motion prevails. Representative Carlson, to your bill is amended. Actually, Representative Simon.
Yeah, just a quick question, Representative Carlson. And this is the first time I've heard this bill as well, but are there any offsetting cost savings from the district courts? I realize in the fiscal note we're talking about 8 to 10 cases a year, but did you hear from the courts at all about any measurable relief for them?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, with the bill going through four or five committees, the courts never entered any testimony. I suspect there will be, now if this becomes law, fewer cases and probably give them some relief of caseload. But the number of cases that go to the courts is a very limited number, so I suppose there's little impact from the standpoint of the court calendar other than there would be a few less cases that they would be dealing with.
Any other questions or comments from members? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, I'm wondering on page 3, line 12, it says one shall be representative of public employers. Is there a definition of public employers?
Representative Carlson.
Is there a definition? Okay, there is a definition, though.
Ms. Listenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. There is a definition of public employer in PELRA, and that would be the definition that would apply to this.
Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you explain in layman terms what that is?
Ms. Blissenbach?
Public employers would include any state employer, school districts. It would include cities, Metro Transit. I'm just trying to think of a number, but those would all be public employers under the Public Employment Labor Relations Act.
Representative McNamara.
In what level of one shall be a representative of public employers? So who would be someone that would be part of that? Can you give some actual examples? I know you said the entities, but at what level would these people, who are they?
Ms. Representative Carlson, Ms. Blissenbach, I'm not sure who's best for answering that question.
That could be any number of people, but it would be a representative of management of a public employer. So that could be a member of a board. It could be there are just a number of people, and that person is appointed by the governor based on recommendations by the public employers. So my guess is they would come up with a list, and the governor would then appoint the person to represent their interests on the board.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So. Would this be at the very top only, like if you took a Minnesota Department of Transportation, so it would be somebody from the commissioner's office, or would it be a middle management person? I mean, they've got, what, 5-6 layers there. What layer do they have to be at?
Ms. Blissenbach.
Well, I was just going to say that would, these are gubernatorial appointments, and so I would assume that various public employers would submit a name, and I would assume that they would probably have someone that's got some background in labor management relations, whether they would be an assistant commissioner or director. I think that would be up to those public employers to submit names to the governor, and then the governor would make that ultimate decision as to who would be appointed. And then remember, in my brief explanation, I indicated then that the same would be true with the employee side, but those two would then choose the third person. And this is a model that's used in other states, and essentially it's modeled after those statutes of the 30-some-odd states that have this system.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Carlson, I still didn't quite follow it completely. So would it just be like a school board member could be a potential person, or could a mid-level manager, maybe second from the top, third from the top in the chain at MnDOT, clearly someone potentially with hundreds of employees under them, would they be eligible to be in this? Do they meet the criteria?
Representative Carlson.
If they're someone who would be representative of a public employer, their name could be submitted to the governor, and the governor would make that that selection. So when you asked, or I guess it was Representative Beard, asked for a definition of a public employer, you have a variety of public employers ranging from state government to local units of government, and any one of those groups could submit a name, but it ultimately would be the governor that would make the decision as to which person would represent the employers, and then the same process would be used relative to the ones that would represent the employees.
Representative McMoy.
Hopefully there'd be enough interest where the governor would have several to choose from.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the one follow-up, first, so if it could come, if I understand you, you said it would be someone that has employees under them. So do we have positions like in MnDOT where that could be a MAPE employee, could be considered the public employer?
Ms. Blissenbach?
Well, just to refer you, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative, just to refer you to the statute, it actually says public employers may submit for consideration names of persons representing their interests. So I would assume they wouldn't pick a member of one of the unions that could be represented by the other board member. So it would be somebody who represents the interests of the employers in that sense.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but I think it's our job here as legislators to not make assumptions about who's somebody's going to pick. I want to know who's eligible to be picked.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, we put an amendment on in one of the, I think it was the last committee stop, where we set up alternates. And so if any board member, any one of the three, were to have a conflict, they have to excuse themselves, and then a person that does not have a conflict would sit on the board to hear that unfair labor practice. So if that scenario, which I think would probably be unlikely, but if that scenario were to come about and that person had a conflict, then the one of the alternates would be moved into that slot.
Anything else, Representative Mackey?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair Carlson. In the State Government Finance Veterans, we passed a bill out, House File 2117, that dealt with veterans' preference termination hearings and the civil service boards. Is this, if this comes law, will that affect what goes on with our veterans in the in employment?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it it would. It doesn't change any of the civil service laws. The only thing it really changes is when you have an unfair labor practice, it goes to this panel that would have would work with the Bureau of Mediation Services. They would do the investigation, and the issue would go to the panel to make a recommendation for resolution. So the only thing we're really doing different, bottom line, is instead of going into the court, it would go before the Bureau of Mediation Services and the panel.
Hmm. Representative Detmer? Thank you. Any other discussion from members? Seeing none, Representative Carlson, any closing comments?
Just would appreciate support. We didn't really talk about the appropriation, and it comes under other bills, and it's the initial appropriation is $125,000. That's to deal with the rulemaking with the Bureau of Mediation Services and the setting up of the panel.
All right. With that, Chair Carlson renews his motion that House File 3014, the first engrossment as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, if I, Ms. Conley could
certainly
make a couple of announcements relative to tomorrow.
Ms. Conley.
Members, the meeting for tomorrow is scheduled for 1 hour after the House adjourns, and we'll meet until the agenda is complete. And then I did post the agendas for Thursday and Friday. On Thursday, we go from 10 until about a quarter to 12, since we go into session at noon. And then Friday, we meet from 10 to about 12. Did I say 12:45? 11:45 on Thursday. And then on Friday, it's from 10 to 12:45. So.
Anything? Any further business before the body? Mr. Chair?
I think we can adjourn.
Thank you. We are adjourned.